Welcome to the Soap Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're starting a new book today, really short one. It'll only take us 1.5 weeks.
Yes, it will. 1.5 weeks. Yeah.
And so, we are going to the New Testament book of James.
James.
Great.
This is a book that a lot of people love. A lot of people really, really love James. I'm sort of with it.
Well, he jumps right in.
He does.
And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. There's no. Let's get to know each other.
Yeah, exactly. At the beginning or the end, it's just boom.
Yeah,
it's like wow. So it's going to be a little weird. So this week we're going to read chapters 1 and 2 and part of 3, mm-hmm. and then next week 3 through 5, and then that gives us enough time to actually add in a second book next week.
Yeah, little guy by the name of Philemon. Just right. One chapter, one short. Page.
Yeah. Yeah, but this week we're just going to focus on James, so it'll be easy from that standpoint. So James was actually written by a man by the name of James. He's the half-brother of Jesus. Mm-hmm. James seems to have gotten involved with the church after Jesus' resurrection. James is really known for this letter, and he's also known from a great speech that he gives in Acts 15, where it seems that he must have, because of the way he was talking and the point that he got up and started talking and everybody listening to him, that he had a leadership position in the church at Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Where they're making some important early Christian decisions.
Yeah, so he was an elder or pastor in the part of the elder team in the church at Jerusalem. Yep. In Galatians, he's called an apostle, but not like one of the 12. He was never one of the 12 apostles. He never even believed in Jesus until after the resurrection.
Yeah, he also shows up in Matthew. He's named as Jesus's brother, and then also in Matthew as Mary's son.
Yeah.
So to kind of get both sides of it.
Yeah, and then Paul mentions him in 1 Corinthians 15 when he's listing Jesus' resurrection appearances. He says that James got a special appearance.
And maybe that's Paul would know about that.
Yeah. Believed maybe that's when he was commissioned to take a role in the church or something like that.
So James probably wrote this from Jerusalem because seems like
that's
he was there.
Were, yeah.
And it's addressed to the 12 tribes dispersed abroad.
Yeah.
Right. So this would have been Jews that had converted to Christianity and then had been forced out of Jerusalem and or Israel because of the persecution that Christians were facing at this time.
Yeah. So and this is really, really early on. OK, none of the rest of the New Testament has been written, probably, you know, maybe one other book, but this is usually considered the first. So if we were to try to place this in the book of Acts, we're talking about all the way back in Acts 8. Saul of Tarsus is not saved yet.
Yeah.
Okay, there's no Paul the Apostle yet. He is, in fact, probably the one that is persecuting the people James is writing to.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that's how early this is, which affects what he's writing. There's no New Testament doctrine of the church yet. There's no New Testament yet.
Right.
Like we were talking about ahead of time, these are Old Testament Jews as far as they know. Nothing's changed. They've believed in Jesus as Savior and Messiah, and that's pretty much it. Except now they're being persecuted for it.
Right. So we're going to see some Jewish references in this letter, and we're also going to see a lot of references about keeping the faith while going through trials.
Yeah.
So these Christians, they had to be thinking, we converted to Christianity, we lost our homes, we got pushed out of where we're at, everything is new, woe is me.
Well, and Saul, a Pharisee is running after them, rabbi and a Pharisee, so now they're pushing back against the religion that they've grown up with, and everything that they thought was true is now attacking them, and there has to be a lot of confusion.
Right.
There has to be, a lot of stuff. The book of James itself, notoriously difficult to outline. So when I said, I like to outline things. I like to see how it all fits together. James just pops around from topic to topic. It's been compared to wisdom books like Proverbs. Proverbs is notorious.
Yeah, you can't.
Proverbs is hard to outline. The Beatitudes, where they're just like boom, 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 right? James sort of fits that mold. And so as you're reading through, he's just like changing from one topic to another. That's James. That's that. I mean, it matches the Old Testament books, and that's what they had. So this is as close to Old Testament as you can get, really, other than the Gospels, as an Old Testament type book in the New Testament.
Okay, that makes sense. Like we said, most writers kind of ease into their letters. James comes out swinging. You know, chapter 1, verse 1, consider it nothing but joy when you fall into all sorts of trials.
Yeah.
Right, and again, these are the people who are in trials. Yeah. So this is intended to be words of encouragement.
Intended to be. Depends on how they took it.
Yeah, and of course, trials are the tests that we Christians have to take to really see how strong our faith is.
Yeah,
and this produces maturity, which produces endurance in our lives, and that's endurance with our faith. Mm-hmm. And James also says that we should pray for wisdom. Mm-hmm. If we're lacking with our current test,
yeah.
And that makes a whole lot of sense. And then he had to add in, but we need to pray without doubting.
Yeah.
Which is true, but it's like, oh, I got all these trials going on with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because God, again, even from the Old Testament, God wants his people to trust him.
Right.
And so James is like, he's always wanted us to trust him. So you're going through stuff. Pray for wisdom. Don't doubt that he wants to give it to you. We have a whole Bible, our Old Testament, their Bible. We have a whole Bible that says that, you know, it's full of wisdom.
Right.
So ask. He wants to give generously and liberally to you.
Right. So as I said, most of the receivers of this letter would have been struggling with lack of money. That had to be a huge concern. They were forced out of Jerusalem because of the persecution, and now they're settling in a foreign land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe for the first time ever, right? Israelites are in a different land. Not for the first time ever, but
for them,
yeah.
They've been in Israel for a long time. They've had, you know, right. So now they're being pushed
different
out.
Cultures that they would not have had exposure to. It's been tough.
Yeah.
And James tells them that their earthly humble means is something for them to take pride in.
Yeah.
And he says that the rich people, and more than likely he's talking about the Jews that are doing the persecution, they have a pride that's going to pass easily away. And instead, happy is the one that endures testing, that provides genuine faith. And that person is going to receive the crown of life.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this crown of life?
So there are five crowns mentioned in the New Testament that are given, that Jesus will give to believers as rewards for faithfulness, for different things, right? This one shows up a couple of different places, but this, it seems to be general faithfulness, perseverance, endurance, you know, I love God, I'm going to go through whatever. And James says, listen, sort of like Hebrews, much, much later, God is not unjust as to forget. James says, he won't forget. Push through, trust him,
right.
And he will reward you for that.
Right.
Don't give up.
Right, which is great. And he stays on that same theme when James says that God can't be tempted and that he doesn't tempt people.
Yeah.
Right, so you could say when you're through all these trials, God, why are you doing this to me? God's not tempting you here.
No, he may allow us to face trials. He may test our faith, but right. He doesn't tempt us with sin. Right. Never does that.
Right. Right. And James then goes in and explains what does happen
yeah.
with the temptation. And he says we are tempted by our own desires. And when the desires are conceived, it gives birth to sin. And if we, you know, at any time we can stop it, right? All this is going on in our head.
Mm-hmm.
It gives birth to sin, and when sin is full grown, it gives birth to death.
Yeah.
And again, that's not a spiritual death with a loss of salvation, but it is sin.
Yeah.
In there. And instead, we shouldn't be led astray in the first place, and we should continue to focus on God.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that temptation itself isn't sin, right? We can't
right.
help that we're tempted. Temptation is right. you know, an outside thing, or even our own heart.
Yeah.
It's what we do with it that can become sin. So it's a good yeah. point there.
So James finishes this chapter with how we should be acting and how we should be responding when we are in a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And he states, all Christians should be quick to listen, slow to speak. It's always good advice there. And slow to anger, especially when you're in a different culture with different things. Slow to anger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody could do something that, you know, is forbidden in, you know, in Jerusalem, but, you know, happens
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Because human anger doesn't lead to God's righteousness is the next verse. And that's really what we're trying to chase is God's righteousness. So our anger doesn't solve that.
Right. Instead, we need to put away our filth and humbly act out the message implanted in us.
Yeah.
I like that one. Yeah. I like that part. And be sure, and James says this, be sure to live out the message, not merely listening to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's easy to listen to it, but basically it's, you know, make sure that you walk the walk, you know, live it out, right?
Yeah. James ends this chapter saying we should care for widows and orphans and keep oneself unstained by the world. Now, this same message is also in the book of Acts where the early church was struggling with widow issue. Mm-hmm. So what's the significance of widows and orphans?
Well, it's important that you brought that out. So their issue with widows was Acts chapter 6, right? And their persecution started in Acts chapter 8. And he says, hey, don't forget the widows. So they're out there, they're struggling. Like you mentioned, they may not have their own, you know, finances, humble means, the whole thing. But if they're facing that, then widows and orphans are facing even more outside of the thing. They, you know, church community, they've lost their synagogues, you know, the whole thing. And so James is like, listen, brotherly affection, part of the path, still holds true. You still have to take care of people. So don't get so wrapped up in your own stuff. Yeah, that you're forgetting what we are supposed to be doing. Old Testament is full of stuff about widows and orphans. He's like, none of this has changed, guys. So just keep doing what you know you're supposed to be doing.
Okay. Good. Chapter 2 starts with a reminder. James is reminding people not to show prejudice, right? So he goes through and he says, look, if somebody rich or poor comes into the church, you need to treat them the same.
Yeah.
So treating them different makes the person that is treating them different, makes them a judge with evil motives. And James says, didn't God choose poor to be the rich in faith?
Yeah.
Which is cool, right? You may be poor, but you're going to have more faith than the rich do.
And this is one of the places where it really sounds like the Beatitudes, like from the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the poor in spirit. You know, they shall, you know, inherit the kingdom. They shall see God. They shall, you know, have these things. And, you know, Jesus talks about the poor and James seems to be picking up on that as well.
Yeah. He also says, follow the golden rule. Now, he calls it the royal law in there, but it's love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. And then James says, if Christians follow the golden rule, you're doing well.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. But if they don't, they're committing a sin. He then says, if you obey the whole law, but fail on one point, you are then guilty of the whole law.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts here with that?
Well, so some people misunderstand this to say that it means all sins are equal in God's sight. You know, one is you know the whole thing. Well, that's not true. I mean, all throughout the Bible, God, when He creates lists of sins, He regularly says these are worse than others. You know, the fact that you have different punishments for different sins proves that. But there are people who say, well, you know, I can do this little thing over here and it doesn't matter. You know, little white lies, or, you know, whatever, you know, some sins don't matter at all. And James is like, hold on a second. If you break the law, you become a lawbreaker. It doesn't matter which one you break, you're a lawbreaker.
Okay.
So what he's telling them, and again, they're still thinking that they're under the Mosaic law. That information may not have, you know, all the way passed through the ranks yet, right? So they're still trying to obey the law. And they're like, well, maybe I don't have to do this. Maybe I don't have to do this. And James is like, hold on a second. If you're going to hold to the whole law, you have to hold to the whole law. It's a package deal. You don't get to pick and choose which laws you're going to obey and which laws you're not. Right. So that's where he's going with that.
Okay. So in the next section, James starts talking about putting faith and works together. Mm-hmm. And we need to remember that James is talking to Christians. So this is not a salvation thing.
Right.
Instead, the point here that is if a person is a Christian, their life should change as they understand Jesus more and more.
Right? Yeah.
We got to know him better so we can love him more.
Right.
That type of deal. And that change should show in the actions a person does. And those actions, James is calling the works.
Yeah. Yeah. Should is a key word there. Doesn't mean it always looks like it. And it doesn't mean that you can always see, you know, good works in me, or I can always see good works in you. And we're not supposed to be judging each other or whatever anyway, right? He uses the word justified, which means to be declared righteous, right? And that's where, but who is the one who declares us righteous, right? It's supposed to be, you know, God, not just each other, right?
Right. But it's also, you want to know who you can trust,
yeah.
right? And who you should model your life after. So if you see somebody that is doing good works, right? And see the fruit that they create, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, see, but what's interesting, though, is that, you know, I can do all the good works in the world and not even be a believer, right? And when he's talking to Jewish people who, you know, are obeying the law, there were a lot of Jewish people who obeyed the law but never believed in Jesus,
right?
So doing good things is not going to save anyone. But the point here, and we, you know, as you really read through it, he talks about faith being useless or faith being dead if it's by itself. He's not talking about, because first of all, faith doesn't save us. God saves us. It's through faith that we receive salvation. But faith doesn't save us anyway, right? So what he's talking about here is you can say you have faith. You can say what you believe. But if your life isn't changed in any way, it's useless. I mean, what can that faith, he says, can that faith save you? Again, not talking about eternal salvation, but physical deliverance from the persecution that they're in. So you say you have faith, fine, I'm a Christian. What does that do in the middle of persecution if it hasn't changed your life at all, right? So basically what he's saying is words are useless. Right? Yeah. From a practical day-to-day, and again, we're not talking about you're going to hell or anything, just from a practical day-to-day, talk is cheap is a good way to put this.
Right. All right, so moving on to chapter 3, and again, we're going to stop after verse 12. So James starts with a comment. Basically, you know, not many of you should become teachers. And then he moves to talking about tongues. And he's not really talking about tongues, but he's talking about the words that come out of our mouths. And James says that the tongue is the worst thing.
Yeah,
it's for how powerful it is. And he brings up a horse and how you can, you know, use the, I don't even know what you use, right?
The bit in the mouth and the
bridle, and you know, to get the horse to move, and that bit that's in the mouth that is actually making the horse move is a very small thing on a very big animal, but yet it commands him.
Yeah.
And he's saying the tongue is the same way.
Yeah.
And then he also equates it to fire also, where a small spark can start a huge forest fire.
Yeah.
A small number of words can do the same thing too.
Yep. Yep. Like a rudder on a ship is another one he uses. Exactly. He's like, you know, it steers the whole thing, right?
And then he ends his thought with, look, man has, we've subdued every animal, but we haven't subdued our tongues.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, with it, we bless God, and with it, we curse people also. So he ends with, this should not happen.
It should not be. Yeah. I think it's interesting. This is actually one of the parts that does go together, because he just got done saying, what does your life look like? You know, you can say that you're a Christian or whatever. What does your life look like? And then he goes right into, how are you speaking? Right?
Yeah, right, true.
So there's, and he says, you know.
Yeah, are your words matching your beliefs?
We curses actions. And blessings coming from the same mouth. And from these, if you remember the audience, Jews, Christians, but Jews in Gentile lands under persecution. Yeah, they're going to be cursing their persecutors. They're going to be cursing the people around them. You know, I don't want to be here, you know, the whole thing. He's like, check your language, because out of one side of your mouth, you're going around, yeah, I'm a Christian. Out of the other side of your mouth, you're saying all sorts of other things, which is, I mean, you don't even have to be a Christian Jew for this. This is just a good
question. That's what I was thinking.
Watch your mouth. Right. So, lots of of good wisdom in here. We have to be a little careful on how we apply specifically if it's not our situation, but still some really good wisdom, some good principles, good. You know, throughout here.
Good. Yeah. Good place to end for the week too.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll pick up here next time. I said, James, you know, I'm a little, not because of the doctrine in it, not because of the teaching in it, just because of how he jumps around a little bit. Maybe you really like James. I know a lot of people, James is my favorite book in the world. Okay, that's great. Tell us why it's your favorite book. Tell us the things that you really, really like about James that maybe we glossed over and you're, oh, I've, you know, love James. I wish you would have talked about this. Bring it up. You can put it in the comments or send us an email or something. Subscribe and follow and like. Share this with your friends and family because they might like the Book of James too. And we will pick up here, middle of chapter 3, next time when we come back, finish James, and go on to the Book of Philemon.